SaaS Open Mic is brought to you by ChartMogul. SaaS startups like Typeform, Pipedrive, and Instapage use ChartMogul to centralize and analyze their subscription billing and customer data. Go to chartmogul.com and sign up for a free trial today. And if you're just starting out, ChartMogul is free for businesses with less than $10,000 in monthly recurring revenue. That's chartmogul.com for a free trial. Welcome to SaaS Open Mic by ChartMogul. I'm Ed Shelley. A number of high-profile apps have introduced subscription plans in the last 12 months, with varying responses from the tech community. Their reason for such a change? Perpetual licensing just doesn't make sense for software in 2018. Ulysses is one of those companies, a multi-platform writing app helping people around the world write more effectively. I use it every day to write blog posts. So I'm really glad to be able to bring you this conversation with founder of Ulysses, Max Seelerman. This is a refreshingly honest discussion about the thinking that went into such a move and some of the deeper reasoning behind it. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. All right. So Max, thanks so much for inviting me here to Leipzig. It's great to be in your office and,
good to talk see you.
A little bit about Ulysses. I think it makes sense for people that aren't familiar with Ulysses and what it is. Like, could you describe very simply like what Ulysses is as a company and as a product?
So Ulysses is a writing app for Mac, iPad, and iPhone, and it sort of aims to be the one-stop writing place for all kinds of writers to go, be it novels or journalists or, I don't know, bloggers, all of kind of people. And it tries to help you organize, stay focused, and get your texts out when you're ready.
As an app, like, it's existed in some form for quite some years now, from what I understand.
Right? Yes. I think we're about to reach the 15-year mark.
Wow.
July 1st.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the when we released the first version.
But it was... It was more of a passion project in the first place, but like before it really grew into a full-scale business. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I sort of tripped into it. My partner, Marcus, whom I started this whole thing with, he wanted an app to write a book and he didn't find something. So he came up with an idea and looked for someone who could do it. I mean, I was like, yeah, I can do it easy. Mm-hmm. And then we started working on it and it was just a side project. And I mean, I was still in high school at that time. And it was around and we continued working on it. Mm-hmm. And we both had our pauses when I went to university. There was a time when I wasn't doing that much. Mm-hmm. And Marcus took a year or two off. Mm-hmm. But we always returned. And at some point when the Mac App Store launched, we put it on there. And in the first week, we had revenue, like half a year of revenue before.
Right.
It wasn't like not gigantic sums. It was like, I don't know, $20,000 or so. Uh-huh. Not too much. But
I mean,
it was like
significant for, you know,
for a side project in a week. And we were like, well, that would be sufficient for the two of us to like survive 2 to 3 months. We don't need much. Let's give it a shot. And this is when I quit my PhD. And Marcus wasn't doing much at the time anyway. So we started the company. And then we did the next thing and the next thing. And then we hired someone and we hired someone. And we did the next thing. And now we're here.
So this is all the way back in high school. Like, what did the ecosystem look like at that point? So I don't know what year we're talking about exactly, but I'm assuming we're like somewhere in early days of Mac OS 10.
We are in the year 2003. Uh-huh. The current version is Mac OS 10.1.
Right.
Safari just launched into beta. Safari 1.0.
Okay.
There was still an Internet Explorer. There was no no Time Machine backup.
Mm-hmm.
The tabs were still real tabs. Mm-hmm. Like, tab controls and everything right. Had pinstripes.
You were using like a titanium PowerBook or something like that, or
right, exactly, yeah. Okay. Something like that. It was, well, I started out on an iMac 3G, like the Bondi blue one.
Cool, yeah.
that was the time. It was really the time when Apple was still doomed, I would
say. Right, right. So this was obviously something that was just something that you wanted to make back then. Did you have any... I'm assuming you had no plans looking forwards to actually grow this into a business?
No, not really.
You weren't even thinking about that?
No, I weren't thinking about it. I mean, it sort of grew into something that was a big part of my life. So because I was just spending so much time on it, and it during university, so you need to know that university is free in Germany, so you don't have to like take loans or something, but you need to have a room to live and need to eat something. And but Ulysses paid for all my studies, most of the biggest part of it. And I could afford to buy new computers now and then. And I could, starting in my first year at university, I went to DubDub, WWDC, the Apple Developer Conference in the US. And I were able to just pay for that. So I never applied for the student thing that existed back then, because it was like, well, I'm earning money, I can just buy it.
Yeah. And which conference was that? Like, what was announced there? Do you remember?
It was 2007. I think it was the year when they announced the iPhone Web SDK, where the original iPhone just launched with iPhone OS 1. And they said the best way to make apps for the iPhone is to do a fucking website.
And they added a bunch of features, right? So that you could make web apps feel more native. Like, adding to home screen, plus removing some of the...
It was a time when there was like the home screen was fixed, single page.
Right.
You couldn't install anything, and that was iPhone OS 1. So that was really real beginning. That was my first dub.
Cool.
That's also when they sold group tickets and offered them you at a discount. So the group ticket was discounted, and then they discounted it again.
Right.
So you got in there quite cheap, and you had month of time to think about if you wanted to go. It's not like the few days you have to now.
Yeah. Sure. As much as I can talk about vintage nostalgia for Apple all day, what's really interesting here is that, like, if we fast forward all these years to today, so Ulysses is like an app that exists across both macOS and iOS. It's has a lot more of like a service element to it, and in more recent times you've actually made this switch to a subscription model.
Right.
I know you shared a lot of your thinking behind this switch, and it's something that we're seeing a lot in this ecosystem is... Mm-hmm. Developers and publishers of apps are, I guess, realizing that the kind of perpetual license, like one-time purchase model for software today is probably not so compatible with the way that platforms work and the way that people use apps. Could you describe a little bit some of your kind of thinking behind this and whether that was like an obvious move for you to make?
So... The move was not obvious. It was a long discussion. I think it took us 2 years from the outset where we said, well, we should probably switch to subscription until it actually happened. So, and like 1.5 years of that, we're just talking it through and pros and cons and why and not. And so it was not obvious. The problem is that software has changed a lot in recent years. It used to be that you would buy floppies of your apps, and that would be it. I mean, someone developed it and sold it, and you got a physical copy of something. You could use it, and maybe you could clone it, but essentially the thing that you bought was what you got. There were no updates and nothing. So like this model where you pay for something and then you get something worked really well there. But then it continued to develop when people got the internet, and the internet got faster, and the software turned out to be shipped only digitally. And then updates were more and more common, until today where we like ship beta releases as 1.0 and like fix up the product over the next couple of years to become into what we actually envisioned.
Yeah.
So it's the way software is developed and the amount of energy that goes into an app continues after the purchase. So and the longer people use your app and the more work you put into it, the worse gets the ratio of like money you get for value of the customer.
Mm.
Because I mean, if they bought for some X in the beginning and now you continue to update it for 10 years and functionality maybe increases like tenfold, then they paid only a tenth of what it's maybe worth.
Mm.
So. And you can try to go against that and sell updates where you say, hey, this is the old version. And if you want the new one, you can pay like 50% off.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of works for some places and for some apps and for, I would say, a bit more historic approaches to software development.
Mm.
But... for an app like ours that exists on multiple platforms that change multiple times a year when new OSs get released, when new devices come out, that need to be maintained across multiple stores, which is the iOS App Store and the Mac App Store.
Mm.
It's just impossible to do something like now is a new version and now you need to pay for what's new.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason is that if you want to make people pay again for an update, you need to have reason. And that means you need to have big features that differentiate the new version from the old one. And that is likely to be different for every user. So you need a bunch of new features that appeal to as many users as possible. And the more platforms you got and the larger the project is, the more difficult it is to like generate this package that suits everyone.
Yeah.
And to get there, you need to like put in a lot of work, which means you don't update the existing versions with bug fixes or something for a certain time. And then you work on these features and you build up risk and all that kind of stuff leads to a situation that is just wrong on multiple levels.
Mm.
And subscription sort of solves that because subscription allows us to think of Ulysses as one product.
Mm-hmm.
It's one app. We like to think of it as a platform sort of because it's the place where you go to write and doesn't matter where it is. It only exists on these devices, but so that's the idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then frees us from all that kind of stuff because, it turns out that our users are most concerned about the app being their writing powerhouse and it being reliable, it being available, it being maintained up to date and occasionally getting new features.
Right.
They don't like use the app because it gets new features every other week. They use it to do work.
Yeah.
And so their value comes from what I said, being available and being stable and all that kind of stuff. And that is not reflected in a single purchase.
Right.
It is reflected in a subscription
where you
like you use it as a service. So you pay for the service, the tool.
How much of that do you think is down to just the nature of Ulysses as a product? Like it's obviously more of a professional tool.
Right.
Than a kind of consumer app that where like maybe people expect like new value every X amount of months or something.
That is a lot. I think a huge portion of that is down to the type of product that we do.
Mm.
I wouldn't say that subscription is the solution for everything, but it's the right solution for us. I would say, and I'm still very convinced of that.
Mm.
It's a difficult discussion and you need to always do this discussion with the product in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And apps don't naturally need to come as a subscription.
Yeah.
But for anything that people rely on to do their business and your ideal customer is that type of person that relies on it to do business or to do something that is very important to them. Doesn't have to be business. It could also be the journal, but you want your journal to be safe and usable and accessible and all that kind of stuff. Then the subscription is a good fit, I would say. And as soon as you drift away into like that, this is a utility. I only use it for parts of my work. From time to time, I need it. It doesn't continuously provide me with a lot of value. Then it gets more difficult. I can see why other developers didn't do the step.
Right.
Yet, maybe. because it's, or why it's not a natural choice for everyone.
It's interesting. So there have been like a number of fairly high profile switches to subscription, and I've seen the response to those from the community, and that's really varied a lot. Like, there was one password, for example, which went to subscription. I think that was a pretty mixed response at the time. Did you anticipate that this could be a difficult period for you guys if perhaps the community turned around and said, like, no thanks, this is not for us?
So we knew it would be a difficult switch. And we, the way we did it, I don't know if we're going to talk about it, but the way we did it was intended to do boom. So it was like we designed it to make it to cause a discussion. The response, I don't know. I mean, of course it was mixed and we expected that, but we knew that we had customers that relied on us. And we hoped that there would be enough customers that relied on us that would come with us into the subscription and that not like everyone stopped using it.
I think, so you wrote a pretty extensive blog post about this, and to me, like, it was one of the more, like, clearly honest, like, well laid out arguments. You really showed with some great, like, little visualizations actually on like how this model or the previous model worked for you, or rather didn't work so well. And what this looked like in the subscription world. So you mentioned that you kind of aimed to create a little bit of a splash in this pivot, like, so what was your strategy there exactly to do this move?
We did it from one day to the other. It was like a momentary switch. We didn't pre-announce it before. We told nobody. We did the press release only on the date, so nobody knew before. And we made an offer to our users, to the ones that purchased before, to get it at a lower rate permanently. But other than that, it was just like we stopped the development of the old app, of the old version, and here's the new version. It's not different in features in any way. It's the exact same app with the exact same way it works. The only thing that's different is it's a new business model. And I did this lengthy blog post explaining why. The idea was to put the emphasis on the main argument, which is sustainability, to take a stance for this app has a value, and the value is not reflected in the way we currently sell it. We need a new way to sell it, and we are not trying to lure you into the switch by giving you some nice features. We are not trying to like throw dust clouds and like walk through it, and like everybody that could possibly get angry gets a super special offer, for example, like grandfathering everybody in. That would have been like trying to mitigate the discussion and like trying to mute the people that could get possibly get angry, and to would also like lessen our point about the switch. It was about saying this kind of product can only be developed in this certain way at the current time. I mean, I can't comment on how it will be in 20 years, but right now it's the right way to do it, and that was our stance to take on, because we've also seen others switch before, and I think they made they made weaker arguments.
Right.
And they tried to lure users into just continuing and try to avoid any confrontation. And in the aftermath, I've talked to a lot of people, and some really said, like, I've chickened out. I've thought about doing this switch multiple times, and I've chickened out.
Right.
And that's why we did it this way. And we got a lot of critique. I mean, it was like the most horrible way to do it ever. Like,
stressful 3 days, I even imagine.
Like, we got tens of thousands of emails.
Wow.
And it's just emails. I mean,
many of the founders I talk to spend hours logging into different applications or poring over Excel sheets to understand the health of their SaaS business and get to the root of issues like churn. ChartMogul connects with your subscription billing provider, automatically calculates your key metrics, and turns them into investor-ready reports. As a result, founders can spend less time on reporting and more time focusing on growth. Start your free trial today at chartmogul.com.
So I've been thinking about this a lot. Why do you think it's so controversial? It's like you're in some ways you're making the platform or the software so much more accessible than before for people who can now just pay like a few dollars per month or something rather than a big upfront purchase.
I would say the biggest part of the controversy is with people that already bought it.
Okay.
I don't feel that customers that are new are really put off by the subscription. And that is quite an interesting observation. We expected it like that before and seems to turn out to be that way as well. Because, I mean, people are used to subscription everywhere in their whole life. I mean, their flat, their mobile, their Netflix and their Dropbox, it's all subscription. So they're really used to that. And that is also what you need to compare it to. I mean, what people will compare it to. They won't compare it to your direct competitor because there will be people that compare you to direct competitors, but most people will just compare it to, their everyday lives and what the way they pay for stuff there.
Yeah.
So that is, there's quite little controversy in that. I mean, people say it's not worth what they want to have and it's not worth what you charge, but like the frustration about the model comes from pre-owners, people that purchased.
Right.
And they, and I would say it's been quite widespread that they have the false notion of owning something for life. I mean, they do own it for life, but only if they don't change everything around it. Like you buy something, you buy an app for a certain platform at a certain time. And now you swap out the OS, the hardware, and everything that's around the app, and you expect it to still work.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it used to be and how it is for a lot of apps still. I mean, they're maintained for 10 years after being discontinued or something.
Yeah.
And people expect it to be updated throughout eternity. And you just have to say, well, see, you paid a price for a product at a certain time. We never made any promises about how long it's going to be updated. You assume it would be some way, but your assumption was, I don't know, not right maybe. It's hard to tell you because I don't really want to piss you off, but I have to because that's what it was. It was the wrong assumption. And that applies to every app you ever buy. Look at your phone. Look at which apps you bought 3 years ago and which are still maintained. These are the ones that are free or subscription. The other ones are gone. And that is a hard thing to digest for people that sort of want to rely on it for parts of their business or something, but are not willing to go into go with a subscription and just don't like the idea. So, and that is where the controversy comes from. That those are the people that are really frustrated, and that not all those people are frustrated. Mm. We also got the exact opposite, like people coming around and saying, I can finally rely on your product. Yeah. I finally know that you will be around in years to come.
Yeah.
And can I pay more?
Like, right.
Those people really came. And but as always, the ones that are upset about a change are the ones that are the loud ones and not the ones that like it. I mean, if you're fine with the switch, you just go with it and you don't like write angry emails.
Right.
Huge love letters.
Yeah. Was there anything that was unexpected that you saw in this change or anything to come out of it that you didn't think about or did it all completely go as planned?
Well, it didn't go as planned. Definitely not.
Okay.
There's been... I don't know. There's two aspects to it. So one is the amount of attention we've gotten. Mm-hmm. We expected to get a lot of attention, but it was way beyond that. So it was like really we were like drowning in emails and messages for 2 months.
Right.
And usually it was like you do a release and you get a lot of email for 3 days and then it falls quickly falls off.
Mm.
For us, it took 2 months. So the this you are getting less emails was like really like week it was like little less, but not significant.
Yeah.
And we had like our staff laid out sort of to have good coverage on the first weeks, and then everybody would be able to take time off. and then what happened is we were still getting that many emails, but people had to take time off, which led to response times of over a week,
right,
or something. Right. That was really not expected. And the other thing was, so we, with the switch, we've made a lot of decisions. Like if you do a product, you do a lot of decisions all the time. It's like hundreds on and even thousands decisions.
Mm.
And also with the subscription switch, we had to make so many decisions. Like it starts with basic things. Like, do you do a free tier? Do you do a medium tier? Do you do a pro tier? How do you split? Do you split by platform? What is the price? Do you do monthly, yearly, quarterly, whatever? So leave alone just the pricing.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of decisions in there.
Yeah.
And we really had a lot of decisions to make. And some of them turned out to be not so optimal. Mm-hmm. And people really crushed us on that.
Right.
So one thing was, we have a monthly price and an annual price, and the monthly price is $5 a month, which makes 60 a year, and we have an annual price which is $40 a month a year, which makes the annual price 33% less than the monthly price. So everybody's okay if you have these two prices put next to each other and say this is 33% less. And then we have the transition offer for our existing customers where we don't go for $40 a year, but $30 a year.
Okay.
And what we did was we put it on the storefront right next to the monthly price. So you had like the transition offer and the monthly price, and the monthly price was still $5 a month, 60 a year.
Mm.
And we had the transition offer next to it, $30 a year. And we wrote on it 50% off, which turned out to really upset a lot of people because it was 25% discount on the annual price, but 50% cheaper than the monthly price. And people thought they would get a 50% discount on the annual price and were getting really angry that like we put up a higher discount number than we actually did. And we tried to cheat them into a higher price than they anticipated. And it really caught us. I mean, I don't know. We talked about that. We had this point of is it clear enough or so? But we discussed it and we said, well, it's clear enough. Every single retail outlet tricks you into buying stuff with discounts that never existed, like for prices that have never been there. Mm-hmm. Like say, like 90% of this mattress. This mattress has never been sold at any other price than right now.
Yeah.
And so we thought it would be okay. And it turned out to be really upsetting right. people, and we did a quick turnaround on that, on reversing that.
Okay.
And there have been a few other decisions like that. I just wanted to like highlight this one yeah. because it was, and so we anticipated, we totally did not anticipate the reaction we'd get on that.
Yeah. It's hard though. Like, I mean, that's just one tiny detail that it's a presentational thing,
yeah.
a communication thing that it's very hard to kind of catch that up front, I guess.
Yeah. And we, one other thing that's similar. So in the existing app, we put in an alert to tell the users about the new app, because the way we had to do the transition on the App Store was to discontinue the existing app and launch a new product.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people don't get this on the App Store as an update or auto install. Right. So they actively need to go there and download it mm-hmm. if they want to do the switch. So we did an alert, and that alert was formulated in a way that some people understood it as a compulsive update. Which makes no sense, because it sent you to the App Store to download a new app mm-hmm. and there was no update being installed over the existing app. But mm-hmm. people were thinking that we were forcing a subscription on them, that we were taking them away from them, the product they paid.
Right.
And like, right. hey, yesterday you paid $70 for this, and today you're going to be charged again yeah. every yeah. single month. Yeah. And I didn't tell you before that. So right. people thought that. And what was really surprising, I mean, if you like take all these things together and we tried to make sense of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we changed all these details as far as we could. Mm-hmm. And then we just lived through those angry yeah. emails and messages, because once it's out, and even if you change it, people will still see the old yeah. version. People will see the comments of other people about yeah. the old version. It really boils down to, you need to assume that if people don't like what you will be doing, mm. they will try to find the issues.
Right.
And they will really come after you with the tiniest, littlest yeah. details. And I'm pretty sure if we had done those right, there would have been others.
Yeah. And there's that's always going to be a thing, right? Like it seems like there are some people that will always see the worst in something like that.
Right. So we do a price change. I mean, yeah. basically it is a price change to change yeah. the payment model, and they don't like it. So they will see the worst, and they will find yeah. it, and they will go after it and it's always assume the worst. I mean, you're reading through an alert and you mm. assume it's the worst. Mm. They are taking everything away, and now I'm going on Twitter and shouting at everybody mm. I can find. Mm. And that was a tough thing
yeah.
to live through. I mean, it's over now, almost everywhere except on the App Store.
Okay.
We're getting 1-star reviews every single day.
People
still
with a grudge.
Yeah. Nobody on Twitter is complaining anymore. Nobody on Facebook is complaining anymore. We don't get any more angry emails. It's all
right,
over.
Right.
Except from the App Store.
Right. Right.
Where we're still getting every single day, there's some review that says, "Thieves, you stole my software." And
yeah.
and part of those are those that think that we really took it away from them and forced yeah. a subscription on them.
Yeah.
And some of those are just, I bought it once. I want to have free updates for life. Yeah. And you guys are,
yeah.
yeah.
I think it's fascinating that this exists around kind of the like apps and software. People's perception of like value probably needs to change a bit. In some cases, mm-hmm. like you charge $5 a month and it's like a massive deal, but people yeah. easily spend that, more than that, on coffee every day. Like it just doesn't really yeah. make that much sense when you think about the value that it delivers. But
I can't count the emails that I got of angry people complaining about this comparison to coffee.
Oh yeah,
I can't drink that okay. many coffees a day as all those all those ugly services want to charge from me. It's a really
I
it's
make
really,
my own coffee.
Yeah, you know, whatever you do, it's gonna come around. Yeah. And then, so for example, one example that's really. We got localized pricing. So mm-hmm. in some countries, the prices are in their local currencies and we translated them. And it turned out that, I don't know in which country, the discount wasn't 25%, but 24.99 something percent. Right. It was like half a cent. Right. And someone complained about that. Parts of it you can't make up. But overall, one thing that I really want to say is the amount of attention we've gotten has really surprised me and positively, because people care. I mean, even those angry people that give us one-star reviews and refresh them every single week and on every update that we do, they seem to really care. They really care about the product. And even if they won't stay with us and pay for us and will hate us forever, they do care about it. And on the attention that we've gotten on the press, with the users, all those emails and all the people coming to me and asking me how has it been how's life?
like me, I guess.
Yeah, so that is really humbling for me to know that people really, really, really care about it's for me, it shows that there's some value in what we do. And because if nobody cared, that would have been way worse.
So you guys are very embedded into like the Apple ecosystem.
Right.
You make use of a lot of the features of both iOS and macOS platforms. Obviously, you're on the App Store on both. So Apple recently kind of rolled out like expanded support for subscription features. Mm-hmm. And they changed the fee structure a bit there, right? So that users that you keep for like more than a year, pay like less fee. Is this something you guys are making use of, or has that changed things for you at all?
We did the real planning of this subscription switch happened after Apple announced it. So the announcement is like this fee change thing is 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It wasn't like in May.
It took effect 2 years ago, or
it took effect 2 years ago.
Huh. That's interesting.
So, like, or I think with what do we have now? iOS 11, iOS 10.
Yeah.
So that's roughly 1.5 years ago, September.
Right.
So it's been there quite a while.
Okay.
And of course we do take advantage of that. I mean, we try to get more yearly subscribers, rather than monthly subscribers. And, we'll have to see how the conversion or the retention is actually the retention after 1 year, but I'm definitely counting on that fee change in my finance planning, because that is definitely a difference.
Yeah,
I mean it's 30% taken away versus 15% taken away, and that I don't know. I think in the end, if you do the math, 20% more for us.
Yeah. I would love to just touch quickly on pricing, because I think that's such a big discussion, both in like software as a service, like on the B2B side, but also I think for you guys as a, I don't know, do you think of yourselves as a consumer app? Like it's somewhere in the middle, right?
It's a good question. Yeah, it's somewhere in the middle. That's also a problem we had with the subscription switch. It's not, we're not just a pro app. There is casual users or occasional users, so to say. We couldn't just have like set any price. Like basically in SaaS, from what I've read is the go-to strategy is like to say, well, it's professionals. What could it be worth to them as a company? And then just double that. Yeah. And that's nothing we could do. We still have a lot of strong competition that is paid up front. And people do compare at times. And then we have casual users that compare an app that costs $5 a month with an app that costs $4 single purchase.
Right.
So that is we are sort of caught in between. I mean, we do want the pros to pay sufficient. But we don't want to lose our casual users and or like or part-time users.
But you made the decision to not differentiate like different plans, like based on features and things, right?
Yeah, we discussed that and we just couldn't come to a conclusion. It was like, where do we do the split? And because everybody's using it differently, it's not easy to like say, well, this feature is pro and this is not, because like, even if it were a pro feature, it was like 90% don't use it. And then you could collect a lot of features, but this is sort of an arbitrary collection of features that, and we really tried to play that through, and we really couldn't come up with a satisfying,
right,
satisfying cut.
And so how did you get to that price point? Like in the end, obviously there were a huge amount of decisions leading up to that, but what was the main influencer of that? Was it the competition or like?
We compared it to a lot of things and we sort of tried to find a sweet spot. So it was, before you would have to pay, $45 for the Mac app and $25 for the iOS app, which makes $70. And then you need to like say, if you do a one-time purchase, how long will that be of value? How would you translate it? Do you translate it into 1 year, into 2 years, 3 years, and so on? And see, we said, well, this one-time purchase should be roughly 2 years. Like, and then you would theoretically need to do a paid update, which would be half the price. And it's a bit difficult. So, but basically would say roughly 2 years, which would make out of the $70, $35 a year, sort of. And then we compared it to others like Dropbox and Netflix. What do people pay for? I mean, there's these dating portals, you know, they charge as well. I mean, people pay for that.
Right.
We just checked on prices in real life, and what does a phone bill cost? And where would we place Ulysses' value in the life of the customer?
Yeah.
And we sort of ended up in a similar range. We ended more like in the 50s, 60s, maybe. And then we had like the 30s, 35 from the old paid model. And we settled somewhere in between. I think we ended up at 45. And then we said, well, we shouldn't have a four. Let's do a $39.99.
Right.
And then the monthly price should be more, and it should be in a certain ratio more, so that it's still in a attractive price, but everybody who uses it, who decides to stay with the app, will go to the annual price, because the annual price is good for us, because the retention is better, and the liquidity that we get, like we get more money earlier,
cash flow,
the cash flow is better.
Yeah,
we do get less revenue overall, but we sort of decided. So that's why we have like this 33% discount, or if you do it the other way around, 50% higher monthly price than annual price.
Yeah.
And that sort of works really well.
Would you have some advice for other companies or apps looking to make this move? Like, what would be your biggest couple of pieces of advice for them, having gone through this entire process?
That's a tough question. So, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm a pricing pro now. I'm sort of happy that what we settled with worked out. Mm. And I'm not sure when we're going to revisit the prices. I'm pretty fine with them right now. I've just recently read we should change our pricing every 3 months. So we failed at that already for 2 times. And it won't happen the third time. We'll have to see. But most of the stuff that we do stems from gut feeling, so it has to feel right. It has to feel okay, and really giving it the time that it takes to make the decision. So the pricing decision took us like half a year. We started out and we did research and we had a price point, and then a month later we revisited it, and everybody was given new arguments, and everybody was given new data and new insights, and I've read this stuff, maybe we should reconsider everything, and like that. So it's really, you should really take time to do the pricing. That is something I can say.
Okay.
Really take time to consider it and sleep over it for multiple days, even not weeks, and revisit it and really check your arguments. Why should it be this high and not this low? And it was good for us to have this time to decide how important are competitors, how important is our previous price, how important is the influence of other subscription services, and to find a balance there, and to talk to people. And like, I did talk to various single people about the switch and pre-announce them and ask them for their feedback. And most of the existing users were like, "Oh, really?" And then I tried and explained a bit, and then, "Oh, well, I'm fine. That's good." And then I asked how much they would be willing to pay. And so I had a few data points. And it turned out that Americans were willing to pay a lot more than Europeans, which is...
Okay. I guess that's not so surprising.
Yeah, I think, if you're living... I only talk to people in Silicon Valley, so that's different as well.
Sure.
I guess it's sort of linked to the average income thing and what position they are in. I mean, and this is why we decided to do international pricing, to do lower prices in various countries. And so we have a few steps in there. I think it's 20% lower in some countries, and we even have countries where it's 20% higher. We did a few bit of research on that as well. We checked with, for example, Spotify. Spotify in Mexico is like a tenth of what it costs in the US.
It varies a lot.
A lot. And we checked it with Office, because that is a business solution for writing, generally put. And they do a bit of international pricing, and we checked with Apple Music and all the kind of stuff that you would, I mean, that you have some relation to, and just check how they are doing it. And then, I mean, in the end, you need to draw your own conclusion. In the end, you need to put down a number, and that's it. And maybe revisit like what led to this number.
Sure.
Later on, but so that's how we did it. And I can say that it really put confidence on me for the price, to really have talked it through a lot. But that's how we do everything. So I mean, we talk through everything until nobody can complain anymore.
Makes sense.
It's time consuming.
Yeah,
and nerve wracking at times. But
You said you do a lot of things based on gut feeling here. But do you have some kind of high level like metrics for the success of Ulysses, especially now that you're living in this subscription world? Like, do you look at things like retention and other numbers to make sense of that, or do you use other ways to?
I do look at those numbers, and I try to make sense of them, if they're good or not good, and but they don't sort of define success for me that much. Of course, I want them to be good. I want all numbers to always be good.
We are.
I think that's natural. You need to know that we are a self-funded bootstrap company, so we don't have any VC money or any investor really that like needs, that puts some value metrics or success metrics on us. And my most important aspect since the beginning and still today is that I need to be able to make a good living of it, and everybody in the team needs to be able to make a good living on it, and that we develop our living standard forward, and that everybody is fine and relaxed and enjoys their work, and has the feeling of providing value to other people. So like that is basically my success metric. Do I feel all right? Does everybody feel all right? Is everybody fine? And I can't say that this is 100% perfect at the moment, because we are still in this transition. The annual renewals will come in August. Like August 11 is my crazy date. That's like the first date of annual renewals. And I know what number should be in the revenue report for that date. And I really I'm already right now freaking out about this date when I get the number. So I know where it should be, and I know that there's sources where I can get churn data from and all that kind of stuff, but I really want to, I want to see it. Mm-hmm. I don't trust it too much until I know it's right. Like,
yeah,
what will the prediction be, and how will that end up in my bank account? Like, there's still steps.
So still some uncertainty there. Yeah.
Yeah, and like when we started out and you saw revenue numbers on the App Store and was like, well, that's interesting. And then you get like 2 months later, you get a wire transfer with some arbitrary sum, and you need to make sense of how that connects to what you saw before, and you need to build links and you need to understand dynamics. And I really had understood that for the paid model that we had before.
Right.
Also because it was much simpler than the subscription thing. And now we have customer retention and all the kind of stuff that is new to me. I know there's a whole world out there that does nothing but like talk about these things. But I'm still learning that. And I prefer sort of to learn it by my own example.
Do you feel less pressure now in this subscription world? Like when it comes to adding value, launching features? On the one hand, there's an expectation now that people are going to get like ongoing value from Ulysses.
Right.
But on the other hand, you don't have to package up these big releases.
It's a mix. So I would say basically I feel less pressure. Mm. But I'm not entirely sure yet how the other time we spend on the product is perceived. So, for example, we've just spent 3 months fixing issues. We've just tweaked small issues that have been annoying to a few people, and we've fixed bugs and improved stuff, and it took us 3 months of work. Mm. And we launched it as minor releases, and nobody complained about it, but nobody cheered about it either. So I guess people are just subjectively feeling the app is stable and maybe even a bit more stable. So, but I don't know how that will come back to us. You know, will people be complaining that I have a subscription and I want 6 new features every year now, or are they satisfied with 2 new features and a lot of bug fixes and a lot of stability?
Like,
where will the user expectation go? Will we eventually be forced to do the same amount of new features in the same time? We do aim for that, but I can't guarantee it. So now the interesting question is, where will we be pushed to? Where will users push us to? Will they push us for quality, or will they push us for features? We try to resist the push for features, and we always did, and we hope to continue that inside the subscription. But I don't have enough insight on that yet.
Right.
And that's also why I look forward to the annual renewal, because I guess we will see reviews from people coming in, or feedback from people coming in on how they've perceived their first year.
Yeah.
And we will have a second feature release within the first year. We had one in the fall, and we had multiple minor releases in between. But so there will be 2 feature releases, which is almost the same as the years before. And I'm really curious to see how people will get back to me or to us on that and say, well, the subscription, you should be doing 3 feature releases a year. And it's been only 6 features. Last year you did 7.5 feature. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know. I mean, those people always exist. Those people will always come. Mm. But we'll have to see.
Yeah. Just one final thing, because I have to ask. you have a shiny aluminium cube sitting there in your hallway. So you guys were rewarded by Apple in 2016 with an Apple Design Award.
Yeah.
What was the experience of getting that? And like, what does that mean for you guys?
It's really, really interesting. So, I mean, the ceremony itself, it was the last year Apple held a Design Awards ceremony where they had a big stage and presented this award on the stage. Huh. Last year they did it more silently, but with more press.
Right.
So, but we had this big stage in this 7,000 people auditorium.
Cool.
Was only half full, but still, I mean, that's still plenty of people. Like, I think it's the biggest hall I've ever stood on the podium of. Yeah. And the experience has been crazy. I mean, this award ceremony and how it played out and how somebody made sure we are in the right position in the line. And we got like, you go there, and then someone else complaining from Apple, like, you can't do it. I can't. And that kind of stuff. So that is really, was really an interesting experience.
Yeah.
And what came out of it was, I would say, more indirect. I mean, it's been a sales peak and all the attention from Apple, but overall, I would say we are more interesting for people to review and talk to, like from real life, like local newspapers, for example.
Right.
No local newspaper ever covered us before.
Yeah.
But now that we have the award, they sort of have something to talk about or have something to get started on. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or they only then realized that we existed.
Yeah.
All possibilities. But when I came back, I had like one interview with a local newspaper here in Leipzig.
Okay.
And then a few weeks later, the next newspaper came. And a few weeks later, the next newspaper came. And they just sort of, I don't know if they write about it in the other newspaper. And then I got into the local startup accelerator and they asked me if I want to be a mentor or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that all came out of that award. Mm. So it was really visibility for us.
Yeah.
And I would also say for me personally, as one of the founders.
Yeah, definitely.
Who's doing all the interviews and who's, I mean, I'm sort of the face of the company. That really, really changed in very interesting way. And I'm really humbled to be in that position. It really is a good and interesting spot to be in.
Yeah.
Receiving this award has been a big dream of myself since the first WWDC I've been at, which closes the circle.
nice.
In 2007, when I were at my first WWDC, there was the ceremony and friends of mine won an award.
Yeah.
And I was really, really envious of them and wanted one myself.
Yeah.
And I had this weird writing app nobody knew about and nobody cared about. And that could continue to be the case in the years to come. And nobody knew it. Nobody cared about it. And then suddenly out of nowhere, I made a company out of it and still nobody knew it, but it continued to be around and we continued to develop it and slowly it picked up. And when I talk to people and say, I work on Ulysses, they usually say, what is that? And when I get to the conference nowadays, I really rarely get this question.
Yeah.
And it's changed gradually over all the years.
Yeah.
And that is really, really humbling and like wanting this award for so many years and then actually getting it.
Yeah. There's so many things here that I think are really interesting for other people building subscription businesses or thinking about like moving to that model. So yeah, really grateful that you can share your experience of this.
Thanks a lot for having me.